Hi, I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and this is Toxic Free Talk Radio, where we talk about how to thrive in a toxic world and live toxic free. It's Wednesday, February 18th, 2015, and the sun is shining today. I know some of you have been in a lot of snow, but today is beautiful here. It's nice and cool in Florida. And we're going to talk about trees. Trees are a very important thing. They're a very important part of our ecosystem, but they're also very important in terms of how they fit into the detoxification system of our planet and help us have clean air to breathe and provide food for us and things like that. And we're going to be talking about that today. This is also, you may have heard of Arbor Day. And Arbor Day, I should have looked it up recently, but I looked it up in the past. And Arbor Day is a day that promotes the planting of trees. And I thought that there must have been a day that is like one day, like Christmas is Christmas all across the country, December 25th. And so I thought there would be a holiday like that, Arbor Day. But there isn't. Arbor Day actually falls on many different dates because it's locally determined by the season when you should be planting trees. It happens in the spring. But like here in Florida, spring happens before it happens in, say, Maine or Massachusetts. And so our Arbor Day is earlier than the Arbor Day in Massachusetts, for example. Excuse me. So today we're going to celebrate trees and their contribution to our health, their contribution to detoxing the environment, and all the benefits that they bring. My guest is Diane Dirks. She's been on the show before, and she talks about many different subjects because she's so interested in all the different ways that nature helps us. She's a permaculture designer, certified permaculture designer, and so she's talking to us from the basic principles of permaculture. She's an agricultural consultant living, working, writing, and researching in Northeast Georgia, using permaculture design, and we're going to be talking about trees first, but we're also and their benefits, but we're also going to talk about planting trees and how trees can be part of our lives. Hi, Diane.
Hi, Deb. Good to talk to you again.
Thank you. So, where shall we start? I think that one thing that we should say before anything else is that we don't have as many trees as we used to have. And it really is necessary for us to be thinking about planting trees. The earth needs us to plant trees. So what happened to our trees?
You know, that's something that has been a big heartbreak for me because people just see trees and they think, oh, well, they're just, you know, part of the background, and they don't realize how interconnected we are with trees. And people talk about global warming and everything else, and they don't realize that when you cut down a whole forest, you have changed the climate. And so one of the things around here, especially Northeast Georgia, not so much for the last 4 or 5 years because there's kind of been a block on building, you know, because of the economy, but we have been taking down our trees because we're running out of other kinds of space to put houses and buildings and strip malls and all that kind of stuff. And the developers have come in and just taken down trees and not replaced them. And also, we've been taking out trees for agriculture as our cities expand into our agricultural land. Then we have to grow someplace, so people just go into the forest and cut them all down. And then we also need building materials, and we've cleared so much land for roadways, especially big highways and stuff, and for power lines, and not replace them. So we're crazily, like in places like the Amazon, they've gone in, and they've taken whole ecosystems apart in order to grow our industrial food, you know, Western food supply like corn and soy and stuff, when we've just been destroying our biodiversity in those forests. But it's all for profit, you know, and people are trying to make a living. So I understand, but we're losing our forests, and it's a really
bad
deal.
We can make a living in a way that doesn't destroy the planet. There are many ways to do that. So,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, we just need to be aware of them. I just want to tell about an experience that I had many years ago when I was on my honeymoon, actually, And my husband and I drove from Northern California, where we lived at the time, to up to Victoria, Canada. And along the way, we passed through an area that had been clear-cut forest. And it just, I have to tell you, it broke my heart. I mean, you hear about it and maybe see pictures of it, of clear-cutting. But when I actually drove through an area that had been clear-cut, I was in tears. I really was in tears. It was like you could see the forest on a part of the land, and then there's this absolutely straight line, and there's nothing on the other side. And it just, you know, it just was like, I can't even describe it except to say that if you've never experienced this, I want people to know that I felt emotional about the damage that was done. And that's very different from going in and taking trees selectively so that the forest continues to stand and continues to be an ecosystem. It's not that I'm saying that we shouldn't use wood as a resource, but to just destroy habitat like that for paper towels, you know, it's just...
Well, I think, Deb, it's because people have lost touch with the concept that we are part of nature.
There is a web of life.
There's a web of life that interconnects us all, and it's all about survival. And if we start thinking like we're mechanical beings or something and we're not part of nature, then you see people doing stupid things like that. They don't realize what they're doing. It's just ignorance of a big, big degree. And I know that, you know, if you are raised in a typical, like, middle-class household, and, you know, you've got to have all your things lined up, all your material possessions in good condition and everything else, and you have your job and everything, and you've gone to university or you've gone to school of some kind, and you're going through life, no place in that education or in that mindset is the emphasis that you are part of the living structure of this planet.
That's absolutely right. I wasn't raised with that. I had to go find it myself because one day I woke up and said, wait a minute, this isn't right. And I thought there has to be something else. And then I went and found that viewpoint that we're part of nature. I mean, it's not just a viewpoint. It's we are part of nature. We wouldn't exist without nature. But I want to tell about another experience where I lived in a place called the San Geronimo Valley in California. And right on the edge of the San Geronimo Valley is a place called Samuel P. Taylor Park. And the thing that is significant about that is that Mr. Samuel P. Taylor preserved that stand of redwoods. And it was going to be used to make something, paper. It was all going to be taken down to make paper. And he collected rags to make paper. He made it so that the trees would stand and the paper got made out of rags.
Wow.
And that was part of the story of us living there, was that those trees were preserved for us instead of being turned into consumer products. And it was such a beautiful thing. And it's such a beautiful, serene, sacred place. And that people can just go there because somebody said, no, we're not going to chop these trees down. And that's something that we can all learn from.
Well, that was someone who was really taking responsibility for his environment. Well done.
It really was. It really was.
Those trees are hundreds of years old. They don't grow overnight. You know, people think that just so they're just there and they'll always be there, but they don't realize what the interconnectedness of those trees is and how long, if you take everything out, how long it takes, maybe never, to replace it. Look at England. I mean, England used to be covered with forest, and now it's barren. And it's, you know, hundreds and hundreds of years later, it hasn't been replaced.
And you know, we need nature there as the backdrop, not just as the backdrop, but as the context in which we live. That's it, the context
that's
in
right.
which we live. We're going to talk more about trees when we come back. This is Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest today is Diane Dirks. She's an agricultural consultant and permaculture designer, and she has a huge garden. We're going to talk about that when we come back. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Dad, and my guest today is Diane Gerbs. She's a permaculture designer and agricultural consultant, and we're talking about trees. So, Diane, trees have so many benefits. Tell us how trees fit into human life.
Well, one thing most people are aware of is food. You go to the store and you pick up a pear or an orange or an apple or anything. That all comes from trees. A lot of our food is tree related. Nuts, all kinds of, you know, almonds and walnuts and hazelnuts and, you know, all these nuts, they're all from trees. And what some people don't realize is there are medicines that come from trees too, but I'll talk about that later. And the other thing that we get out of it is we breathe. Because trees take the carbon dioxide in the atmosphere and they convert it into oxygen and break it down and take the carbon and make use of it, like a huge percentage of a tree, maybe up to 60% of the mass of a tree is built from the carbon, from carbon dioxide. So it's building its own body, and it's every part of it is exuding or putting out oxygen. And so we breathe because we have trees. It's the planet's lungs. And the other thing that's more subtle is that they actually alter the climate around them. They create microclimates. if you've ever been a hiker, I've done a lot of hiking up in the mountains in California and various other places and parts of the world. And you're walking along maybe a rocky area on the side of a hill or something, and it's maybe June or July, and you're sweating, and it's hot and everything else. And then you come around the corner, and there's a stand of trees.
Yes.
And you walk in there, and suddenly you're 10 degrees or 15 degrees cooler.
Yes.
Well, that's doing it to the planet. I mean, they're the lungs of the planet, but they're also the cooling factor. And so you notice it when you're walking from, say, a grassland, what's called savanna, you know, like a field or something, or maybe across the desert area, and then you come into some trees, even bushes, you know, tall bushes, mesquite or smoke trees in the California desert, things like that, you notice right away that there's a difference in the temperature.
Yeah.
So it has a lot to do with climate. And those are the things that most people know get out of it, you know, but also building materials. It's a renewable resource if you don't clear cut it, you know, if you're responsibly lumbering an area. We get an awful lot of our structures and our building and our art materials and all kinds of stuff from wood.
Right.
So I've kind of covered a broad field there, but that's...
Well, one of the things I wanted to add to this, you mentioned this, but I want to say it again, because when I was first learning about nature and our interconnections with the natural world, I was looking at what trees do for us in terms of us breathing and them breathing. And that there's this beautiful exchange of us exhaling carbon dioxide, which is the food for trees.
Yeah.
And
it's
trees,
one of the sources of trees. Yeah, it's one of them.
Yeah, I mean, it serves as food for trees. And the trees, quote unquote, exhale by releasing oxygen, which we need in order to breathe. It's a nutrient for us. And so there's this back and forth symbiotic relationship. And I remember a day just sitting there, just kind of looking at, oh, I'm exhaling. This is going out to the trees, and the trees are sending me oxygen, and I'm sending them carbon dioxide, and they're sending me oxygen. And this is just going on over and over and over again all around the world on a continuous basis. And without trees, where would we get our oxygen? You know, it's so beautiful to me how this whole system is set up, that that everything that is needed is in this cyclic exchange. I guess exchange is a really good word, but I see
right.
That throughout nature, and it's just we need trees to breathe. We need trees to eat. They contribute to our survival, very literally contribute to us being alive.
That's right. There's another aspect to this, too. I mean, I will say that we aren't only getting our air, our good oxygen from trees. That's on the land we are. The oxygen coming out of the ocean is a big piece of that, too. But as far as something that we are aware of being around all the time, absolutely. But there's another thing that trees do that most people are totally unaware of, and that is there's this thing called transpiration. And transpiration is the tree not only letting loose of oxygen, but moisture is constantly being evaporated off of a tree. The surface area of a tree, if you laid it all out, is huge. I mean, it's bigger than a football field. You know, the amount of the surface of a tree, and trees are continuously outgassing oxygen, and they're also transpiring or evaporating moisture. And they take their moisture deep from the soil, and it comes up through the stem of a tree and out of the leaves, and the accumulated moisture that comes off of trees is what makes rain. It's not just evaporating off of, yes, it's much more surface area coming off a tree than off lakes and streams, or even, you know, unless you get right down to the ocean. In terms of the land mass, 95% of what is in the atmosphere as a moisture source is trees. And when we worry about droughts and everything, you look at California, they're experiencing these horrible droughts.
But they cut the trees. They cut the trees down.
Yeah. And they cut the biggest ones.
Yeah. Hello, are you there? Did we get cut off? Diane, well, you know what? It's almost time for break anyway, and we will solve that technical problem in a moment. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd. My guest today is Diane Dirks, and we'll get her back on the line. We'll be right back. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest today is Diane Dirks, and we've been trying to get her on the line throughout this whole commercial, and we got her just in time. Hi, Diane.
Hi.
So what happened?
Difficulty. I don't know. You know, we've had ice storms here, and we might have lost the line. We almost were out. Yesterday and day before, we had the flickering lights, and, you know, we're in the rural area, so who knows?
I
called on my cell.
That's great that you did that. So let's go on and talk about how trees help to detoxify the earth. See, even I just want to make this point that I talk about detox a lot, about how we need to detox our bodies. But detox is a natural thing. And it's something that I never thought about for many years in my life. But as I started learning about the importance of detoxing and why we need to detox our bodies, why we need to detox them more than naturally occurs, I started seeing detox every place. And so the earth is like, it has the same processes as our bodies do. And so, of course, if there's a pileup of toxic chemicals, then the earth has to have some, even just the normal metabolic processes of the earth, there are detox processes going on. But just like our bodies end up with body burden from having too many toxic chemicals, the earth ends up that way too. And that's why we have so much pollution, because the earth can't process the amount of toxic chemicals that we're putting into it. So planting trees can help with that detoxification process and create a better environment. And Diane, tell us how that happens.
It's amazing the parallels between the earth and our bodies. I am continuously amazed at those parallels.
Because
we talked about before about the fact that the microbes, the beneficial microbes in the soil are exactly the same ones in our gut and things like that. I mean, the parallels are amazing. That's why we are part of the web of life, you know.
people don't realize there's all those connections. But yes, trees are tremendously detoxifying, and they do it in so many ways. It isn't just one way or another. I mean, one of the things that it does on a broad basis, because we talked about this just before the break, was the rain. Because we get all the crud in the air from industrial processes and everything. And if we didn't have rain washing the stuff out all the time, it would just be horribly clogged up. I mean, there'd just be no way that anything could breathe, not just humans, but animals, everybody, you know. That's a big one. And then another one is the fact that they're intaking and exhaling all the time the atmosphere that is full of toxins, and it processes those. In fact, trees are tremendous storehouses of the toxins because they intake the toxins from the water and the air, and they store them. And, you know, in permaculture, one of the things we talk about is anything that isn't used becomes a pollutant. Right. So if we can't have a use for something, it's polluting. Well,
that's
trees,
right. It isn't even about if it's toxic or not. It's just it doesn't have a use.
That's right.
It's an extraneous particle.
Yeah, you get too many. This is a silly example, but you know, we love ice cream now and then. But if we were swimming in ice cream, it would be a problem.
Yes. Yes.
So. The trees intake the heavy metals and the toxins in the atmosphere and make it part of their bodies. So this is one of the reasons why the big trees in the forest are really, because it turns out that the bigger the tree, the more it's intaking and storing and changing the toxins and the poisons in our atmosphere and in the water and in the soil, because they're intaking all that and they're making it part of their bodies. And so it's almost like a filter. They're acting as a filter.
But let me ask you a question, because I want to be really clear, because I think that some people are going to listen to this and say, oh, they're taking in these toxic chemicals, so the trees are full of toxic chemicals and the wood would be contaminated with toxic chemicals. But that's not what happens, right?
No.
It actually changes. It turns those elements into something else.
That's right. It's amazing. It couldn't call it transmigration. There's a word, something like that, where living entities like trees or bacteria or fungi or whatever actually alter the physical stuff that they're intaking. This is one of the reasons why you can run toxic waste like sludge and, things from industrial processes and stuff through a wetland, and it comes out the other end and it's not toxic anymore.
Right, right. So see, it's so interesting to me that life is so oriented towards health and having life continue, and that anything that is toxic, there's an antidote for it. Actually, there's a solution in nature for it.
Well, you know, you want to know how I view that? I view that as nature is opportunistic. It's like it sees something that there's extra of, and it goes, how can I use that? And then,
yes.
then they use it. You know, it's like there's always this competition in life forms to have the things it needs. And one of the things it needs may be the thing that we consider toxic.
Right, but it might not be toxic to something else.
Right,
or
it might be
able to break it down or something like that.
Exactly.
It's interesting that something can be toxic to us as humans, but not be toxic. Like, we wouldn't want to be breathing carbon dioxide all day long, that we wouldn't be able to survive on that, yet a tree loves it.
Oh, yeah, it's got to have it, because it doesn't look at carbon dioxide as a toxic gas. It looks at it as carbon and oxygen. And the oxygen it gets rid of, here's the interesting thing about that. There are different parts of the day, like at night, it isn't always outflowing oxygen. Sometimes it's intaking it a little bit too. It's like it breathes. Trees breathe very slowly compared to, animals or humans, but there is an inflow and an outflow that balances with a tree.
Oh, I'm sure there is. Yeah. There must be, because there's an inflow and an outflow to everything.
Right. That's, it's balanced.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's time for break again. Let's not lose you. I'm sure we won't on your cell phone. And you're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd. My guest today is Diane Dirks, permaculture designer. And we're talking about trees. When we come back, we're going to talk about planting trees. We'll be right back. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest is Diane Dirks, permaculture designer and agricultural consultant. And she's got a, how many beds does she have? She actually has created what's called a food forest. And she has 93 beds in her garden. She has many foods and herbs. And this is actually a way of planting that all revolves around trees. So we've actually done a whole show about food forests. You could just go to toxicfreetalkradio.com and find the food forest show of Diane's. But tell us a little bit about it, Diane. Why plan a food garden around a forest?
Well, see, in permaculture, we try to follow what nature does. And if you go into a forest, you don't see rows of stuff. You don't see trees carefully cleared away. You see everything growing together. And they enhance each other, all these plants and things that are in there. And that's how the planning, the design, since permaculture is a design science that follows natural laws, we have learned that if you put things into a design that you're following natural law, you're going to want to make it as close to how nature would do it as possible. And so we have found that when you plant herbs and various plants that are compatible, we call them companion gardening, or a technical term in permaculture is a guild, like a G-U-I-L-D, a guild, are plants that like to be around each other and enhance each other and help each other. And so if you're planting something next to a tree that is going to help that tree, it's going to help the tree. Then it's just a matter of finding which things are compatible, which there's a lot of work on that that's been done. Then that's what I've done. I've found out what those things were that like each other and help each other, and then I plant those together. And then they enhance each other's growth. And it's amazing the amount of production you can get in the same amount of space if you follow those kinds of patterns in nature.
It really is. But let's go on, because we only have just a few minutes left at the end of our hour. I want to make sure that we talk about the necessity to plant trees and how to do that. Like, if you've been listening to this show or had an awareness before that you should be planting trees, how would one go about that? Like, how would you decide where to plant the tree, and where would you get trees? And questions like that. What should people know to empower them to go plant trees?
Well, you can go on the internet and you can, find out what growing zone you live in, because that will determine what will survive well in your environment. There's a USDA has a whole bunch of information on growing zones, and you can look that up. And then you can call around and find out your local nurseries. And usually the guys who are selling trees in a nursery, especially if it's a professional nursery, will tell you the kinds of plants that grow well in your area. And then you make a list of them and call around, look online, find what grows well in your area, and then find out when the good time is to grow it. Like in Northeast Georgia right now, if the soil isn't frozen right now, this is a time to plant, because you want to put the tree in the ground before the sap starts to flow.
Right.
Because it's in a dormant stage, and the shock of moving that tree will be less if you're doing it before the sap starts to flow. And, I mean, I've grown plants. I've put trees in at odd times and didn't understand that it's better for a tree to do it in that way and had them survive, but I think they have to work a little harder to do well. And then all kinds of places online tell you how to grow trees, how to put them in the ground, but I like to just take a tree that has a root ball on it and measure across the top of the root ball, how wide it is, and then triple that and dig a hole that big around, and then I measure from the top of the root ball to the bottom of the root ball, and I add a couple, 3 inches to that, and how deep I grow, how deep I dig the hole. And then add nutrients to the soil, compost and composted manure, and maybe some sand, some crushed granite. And then I take the soil, because we have Georgia clay here, so it's very hard. So I put it through a sieve, and I take out all the roots from the grass or whatever is in there and mix it with these other things. And then I pour a lot of water in the hole so it really seeps down in there. And then I add about 3 inches of the soil in kind of a cone shape and loosen the roots in the root ball. And if the roots are twisting around the pot like it's been in the pot too long, I gently ease those away so I straighten this out a little bit. And when I put the tree ball in the ground, I let those longer roots kind of radiate out from the trunk. And then I gently put the dirt in layers and pack it down so there's no air pockets and keep adding soil. And then I put the soil up to the level of the top of the root ball. You don't want to ever add too much soil over the top because it'll cut off its oxygen, and pack it down and wet it really well and add a little soil because that's going to settle. And then around the rim of it, almost like a spare tire, I put a little mound of earth all the way around so that when I pour water in there, it'll stay. It won't just run downhill. Right. And if it's a big tree, I'll take a PVC pipe and I'll put holes in it, like quarter-inch holes all the way around, so it sinks down about a So the bottom part of it where the holes are is about a foot, and then the pipe sticks up about 6 or 8 inches or a foot. And then I pack the soil. I plant the tree and I pack the soil. That way I can get water way down to the roots, if especially in a dry area. And that lets a little air in there too, which the roots need. And then if it's on an area where it's going to get a lot of wind, I'll put some stakes on either side of the tree and wrap some wire with a chunk of a hose, like an old piece of hose from the water hose, and put that in there so that part of the hose is actually touching the tree. So, and then I loosely attach it to the stakes on either side of the tree so that it can give a little bit, so the stem of the tree can move, and that will strengthen the tree. But you want it so that at least if a bad wind comes along, it's not going to knock the thing over and expose the roots and everything. That's just kind of protection.
Here,
I water it in really well. Sorry, go ahead.
Here in Clearwater, they actually give trees away. And in the spring, people line up for these trees, and they're exactly the trees that we should be planting here. And the city just gives them away for free. And so I have a few of those trees in my yard. And so like locations that people... If people have property, like I live on in a suburban area with a little property around my house, a very small amount of property around my house, but there's still, I have my parking strips need to be planted with trees, because if you plant parking strips with trees, then there's more shade on your house and on the sidewalk and on the street, and it lowers the temperature, especially in a hot place like Florida. So, any opportunity you have to plant a tree, but if you don't have your own property where you could plant a tree, where could somebody plant a tree?
I've seen people go to their neighbors and ask if they have a spot, if they could plant a tree there. Sometimes the local parks and stuff will let you plant a tree, especially if you're a member of a group or something and you're planting a memorial tree. They love that.
Yes.
Also, you can get your Girl Scouts and Boy Scout troops to plant trees as part of their curriculum, part of their contribution. You can find places to plant trees. I know in big cities they put them right along between the sidewalk and the street, but you got to watch out what kind of tree you put in there, because especially evergreen trees, their roots radiate out and are parallel to the surface of the soil, and they will lift up concrete. I had a tree in California that lifted a patio. We had to cut it down because it was starting to lift the foundation of our house.
Yeah.
So it's a good thing to, if you're going to put in a tree, it's a good thing to have a little knowledge of what how it grows before you go just willy-nilly putting it in the ground.
And remember too that a tree can be a food source, and that in times past, many of the older houses, if you go to old neighborhoods, there's lots of trees in the yard that are, especially here in Florida, in older neighborhoods, every backyard and front yards too have citrus trees.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just, we have so much citrus here, we all can't eat it. It's more than we can eat. And people are always saying, would you like some grapefruits? Would you like some tangerines? But we all have trees. And it's so wonderful. I can't tell you how wonderful it is to have food-bearing trees and just go out during that season and just be able to pick those tangerines off your tree. Or I used to have, this isn't a tree story, but when I lived in Inverness, California, I had blackberry bushes, wild blackberry bushes in my front yard.
We have those here.
And I would just walk out the front door and put blackberries in my dish. And you can do that with trees. And this is the time I really encourage any of you who have space in your yard to, it's time to go. Thank you so much, Diane. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lindgad. Be well.
Bye-bye.
Bye.